From Trailblaze, this is Anchored, a Roadie themed podcast style, low sodium option for the ocean state's sea salties opinions. Neither Elise nor myself will be your hosts today, and instead we're playing you a podcast episode from a show we share our studio with. The show is called Sex Ed Debunked, and it's hosted by mother-daughter duo Christine and Shannon Curley. In the episode we're about to play with you, you'll hear Christine and Shannon talk about performative allyship along with their guest, Jason Sylvia of the Creative Capital Show, there we go, from right here in Providence, Rhode Island. And the treat is that that episode was actually first recorded for the Creative Capital Show. So this is a little more of podcast inception, which is not a movie that I've seen either. So nobody's surprised about that one. But here's the episode. Please enjoy.
Hi, and welcome to Sex Ed Debunked, a cross-generational podcast about sex positivity, sexual health, and why I'd rather have Chick-fil-A be outright homophobic than see them slapping rainbows on their drive-thru during Pride Month.
Of course, we'd rather no one be homophobic.
That's true. We'd actually much prefer that. But if you are going to be a bigot, at least don't be a hypocritical bigot.
That's a very fine line.
Very important distinction.
As you might be able to tell on today's episode, we're going to talk about why sex sells, allegedly. But sexuality does not.
Does not.
And we're also going to look at the myth that mainstream culture is comfortable with the idea of sex and sexuality, because as we know, they're both very different things.
Very different. Very different. So this conversation actually came up during our guest spot on the Creative Capital Show a few weeks ago, which we recorded with Jason Sylvia. But we had such a good time talking about it, and we really enjoyed this particular part of the conversation. So we wanted to share it with our Sex Ed Debunked listeners as well. So this episode is going to take a slightly different format. We're going to play a good part of that interview for you, and then jump in with some post-mortem thoughts and then wrap
post-mortem.
Up.
Post-mortem?
Well,
I mean, it's a Monday morning, but really.
And then we'll wrap up with our usual put-to-bed format.
I hope you enjoy it.
Enjoy.
One thing that I find interesting, and I definitely want to get both your perspective on, because I think this goes into the whole like logistics and business and things of that nature, is sex sells. Like, it does. It does in this country, right? It sells. And
but not sexuality. But that's the difference.
Thank
Jay.
You. Because that's what I find so interesting, is like, nobody, it seems like nobody has a problem when, like, hey, let's get a sexy guy, girl, they, them, person, whatever you want, however you want to word it, to like sell a product. Like, like that's been happening, right? That's advertising. That's fine. You know, we can have it. We can have, to a degree, we can have it in our media. But the moment, like, oh, like, how about talking about sexuality or sexuality to sell a product or sexuality of a character on a show, or, you know, why do you, but like, from you both doing the show, what, and this could probably be a separate, like, 4-hour episode. Yeah. Why do you think that is? Like, why is it that, like, hey, sex can sell, like, you know, that's fine. I mean, porn, there are some people who have, you know, something against porn, but like porn is like a, like, accepted thing to a degree. I mean, like Playboy.
Well, it's,
you know,
certainly
like
accessible.
It's accessible. Like that, using sex, but sexuality, like, why is that the thin red line as far as like, nope, like that's the thing that you're, you know, that's taboo. Sex sells, fine. Sexuality, no.
I think sexuality makes people uncomfortable.
I do. I agree.
Yeah,
I agree.
More than just sex does, because, you know, you can write sex off as being, you know, it's necessary to procreate. Like, we can call it a necessity, but sexuality is a much deeper conversation. It's a much more confusing conversation in a lot of ways.
And sexy is kind of about fun and flirty and adventure.
And sexuality is a nightmare.
It's a mess.
Figuring it out is a fucking mess. So people want to just say, you know, call it a binary. Please just be straight. Maybe don't be gay. Please don't be gay either. Like, you know, most people are like, don't. And then you want to introduce queer, and you want to introduce 17 other letters in the LGBTQ. And it confuses people. And I think,
well, and you want to talk about feelings and arousal and performance and body image. And that stuff gets serious. And the serious stuff is harder for people to really dig into and really question. So it's a lot easier to be, wear a sexy dress, wear sexy lingerie, wear, you know.
Yeah, and I
sexy
think,
jeans.
You know, unfortunately, it's become very politicized, right? It's like, you know, the left cares about sexuality and LGBTQ rights and all this stuff, and the right doesn't. And that's not true. It's not that black and white. But I've seen on so many like forums and things, the most random forums, right? Like I'll be on a subreddit and it'll be about sports and they'll be like, oh, the first, you know, out gay football player and mm-hmm. you know, declares in the draft, and everyone's like, oh my God, who cares? Stop pandering to the left. And you're like, he's not pandering to the left. He's literally just gay.
Right.
But it becomes politicized. And so I think it just, there's a lot of gray area, and I think there's just a lot of confusion, and there's a lot tied up into the conversation of sexuality that is not necessarily brought up in just sex.
From a business perspective, right? Because I think that brings up another interesting, like almost like a sidebar question, but it's mm-hmm. still kind of in the arena of this main question. Because you were saying things about, you know, sexuality becoming politicized. The previous guest I had on the show, Stephen Burkhart, runs a creative marketing agency, mm-hmm. and he was saying as you were talking about that, a quote from that show. Also, shameless self cross promotion. Go listen to the Stephen Burkhart episode after this one. He was saying, you know, marketers today are playing with fire because depending on how you word or present something, especially it's a bit – because like it's an individual is one thing, but like a business is another. Or even like a business using an individual or an influencer or whatever to promote a certain product, if it's taken a certain way and like the Folgers commercial – I won't get into mm-hmm. the Folgers commercial, but you're both kind of looking at me like, you know what I'm talking about, that – Go look up Folgers holiday ad. I won't even get to that. There you go. That's maybe another future holiday
there
episode
go.
for you
next
too.
Year. See you then if we make it.
You know, but as far as like, even if it's just even if it's not the intended thing, if it's perceived a certain way, it can mess with the business. It can mess mm-hmm. with their revenues and things like that. You know, as far as that goes, and again, like how have you from even doing the show and also working in the professional spaces you're working in, how have you seen businesses deal with, interact, / promote or maybe not promote sexuality? Not selling sex, because a lot of businesses do that, or whether it's like, you know, subliminally or just over the top, but businesses dealing with sexuality when it comes, like as far as like in a professional manner.
So I have a couple of thoughts on that.
I have a few myself too.
So one, I think last year during Pride was like one of the first times where I really saw a lot of backlash against performative allyship in corporate.
And thank you for bringing that up, because I was going to actually mention that, but you mm-hmm. took the words right out of my mouth. So that there's that aspect too. So mm-hmm. go off. Cause that was one of the things, as I'm asking the question, I'm like, corporate allyship. And like, cause that's been a trending topic, especially the last Pride that happened. So, please continue.
Yeah. So I think, you know, and that, you know, is just when companies all of a sudden put rainbow flags up and, you know, change their logo to rainbow and whatever. And that's great. But do they follow that up with, you know, any of their quarterly proceeds going to the Trevor Project or, mm-hmm. you know, human rights campaign or whatever? And the answer is no. So that I think was a big thing, like I said, last year. So that's kind of using sexuality to make yourself look like you've got, you know, great social values at mm-hmm. a company. But if you're not also, for example, you know, providing coverage for adoption fees and you're not, you know, considering that in your benefits plan and things like that.
Or health insurance.
Your health insurance, surgeries. You know, are you covering hormone therapy if someone needs that? Yeah. So there's a lot of things, you know, and that's where it becomes performative, is that you're, you know, yes, that's great that you slapped a rainbow on your logo.
And what's your real diversity in your employees?
Right. I mean, great example, like again, like my previous employer always had a booth at Pride, but refused to gender neutralize the toy lines. You know, so that's performative allyship. So to that extent, you know, they're using sexuality, I think, to have a better, you know, have a better reputation or a better CSR.
Corporate image.
Yeah, better. Just,
oh, we can get this market now because look, like we're mm-hmm. super open and accepting.
We want to get the queer market.
Well, and that's CSR has also become a buzzword in the last 3 years, which is corporate social responsibility. And so mm-hmm. that's where the backlash of performative allyship has come from, is as companies talk more about CSR, they're doing more performative things.
Oh, you mean like the NFL talking about social justice?
Yeah, and we're like, okay, sorry, Colin Kaepernick. Late to the party, I guess, or early to the party. And then the other thing, you know, so for me, like I said, I got added to the LGBT group at work, but it's separate from the diversity and inclusion group. And that's because we don't want straight people in the group. And I think that's interesting in the workplace. It's they kind of created this separate group. I didn't create it. I was invited to it, but it was sort of like, we really appreciate the allies, but there's different conversations that are being had. And I think just when you think about that in a business mindset, it's like, it's the difference between tolerance and acceptance, right? And it's also not reducing. In some ways, having a, you know, diversity and inclusion Slack group that includes everyone, including all of your straight folk, is this is in similar ways to saying like, well, I'm colorblind. Right. You're like, well, thank you for trying to express that you get it, but you don't 100% get it. And so we do like having our own space where, you know, it just feels a little bit freer. So, you know, I think a lot of companies are making strides in the right direction, but I also think, you know, there's just a sensitivity that you have to walk around with. And we walk around with that sensitivity on this show too, because we know that we're not covering every topic. You know, if you've listened to the episodes all the way through, there's like a 40-second disclaimer at the end of every one of our episodes that says, you know, we're doing our best.
We're doing the best we can.
We're doing our best to be inclusive, but like some folks might not be represented and some folks might be left out. And that's just the reality of it, you know, and we're not angry feminists, and I'm not an angry queer. You know, I'm not like, well, my company didn't do enough. Sometimes we are, but I think to answer your question, it's like, you don't want to see something like sexuality weaponized because it makes a company look good. But I think there's also just, you figure out the difference between someone who's legitimately doing their best and someone who's just doing what the trend says to do.
I want to get to that in a moment, but you brought up an interesting, side question I want to ask in relation to, you know, you're both talking about sexuality, a subject that's taboo. It's not talked about a lot.
It's uncomfortable.
Do you think that, cause you were saying how, hey, you know, this is, there's a certain sensitivity we need to have. Do you think that that can sometimes like, hey, we have to be like, we have to have a sensitivity, not just your show, but just like people in general sometimes. Do you think that sometimes can be a hindrance of like, possibly having more people talk about it? Could that possibly not necessarily hurt, but like, oh, maybe that's why it's also difficult to talk about, because people feel like they have to have a sensitivity to it. Can that be kind of like holding things back? Like, it's done with the best intentions, but is that maybe a contributing factor as to why it's a taboo thing? It's like, oh, because we have to say it softly, or like we have to say it a certain way. Not to go completely in the opposite end of the spectrum, but I just find that part interesting too, is like, I wonder if that could be a hindrance as well.
So I think the best example of that in terms of what we talk about is any conversation about gender.
Right.
And I know, Mom, you have had conversations like this where it's like, because people are so like hesitant to say the wrong thing, they don't say anything.
Yeah.
And sometimes that manifests as, I'm just not going to say anything. Sometimes it manifests as real intolerance.
Right. But sometimes it's just difficulty in, especially in an older generation, of trying to understand, like, wait, I grew up thinking there were only two genders. Now what do I do? And why are there different pronouns? And how do I use they? And some of it is just, there hasn't been the right message in how to understand it. So we will probably have a couple of episodes in the spring semester dealing with gender identity and explaining some of this, because a lot of it, from what I hear, is, I don't understand. Can someone explain it to me? And I do think you're right. I think that's part of the hesitancy, is I don't want to say the wrong thing. I don't want to step in the, you know, step in it.
I think in terms of sensitivity, yes, there's a lot of people I think who feel like they have to walk on eggshells. And I think my response to that is like, no, just break them. Stomp on the eggshells, fuck it up, and then we'll talk about it, you know? And I know a lot of folks who use, you know, different pronouns will say, like, I'd rather you mess up and then I can just correct you and then we can just move on than have you make it a whole thing, right? If I prefer they and you call me she, well, that's okay, as long as when I correct you, you don't get defensive about it.
That actually leads perfectly into my next question, because we were talking about kind of like this corporate allyship coming off faux, and then, you know, maybe some people are apprehensive, just, you know, talking about something like sexuality, which can lead to why sexuality doesn't get talked about enough, right? So going with that, how can, because I'm now thinking, like, I'm putting, you know, let's put a business person's hat on this, and it's like, hey, listen, I only care about money. I don't care about anything else.
Right.
Okay, fine, right? And you want to go after a demographic because, you know, whatever you identify as, you buy stuff.
Right.
Right. Like you, at the end of the day, you buy stuff. Like, you know, like you were saying at Pride, like I saw a ton of advertisements from so many liquor companies that were just mm-hmm. like,
oh yeah, the like Svedka every like year wraps their bottle.
Everything had a rainbow. Budweiser had the rainbow. Everybody had a rainbow mm-hmm. can or bottle or whatever. To me, and I may just have, this could be out of ignorance. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. You want to wrap your rainbow like not your rainbow, a rainbow around a product. You know, do whatever you want. But how could a company, on a macro sense, and then I also want to talk about an individual, you know, sense as well. How can a company on a macro sense, hey, we want to make money off these people. Like that's what companies do. Like they go after certain markets, right? Mm-hmm. What have you seen, or just as far as, you know, different companies you've worked for and corporations, how can they do it in a way that's, I guess, genuine?
So I think there's different ways to do it, right? So if Budweiser once a year wants to slap a rainbow on their bottle, fine. But what I would like to see is that Budweiser once a year puts out a commercial campaign that has a gay couple in it.
Right.
That's not that hard. Yeah, you could just have two dudes cheersing in the background with like their tight shorts that they wear, you know, whatever.
Or just steal the SNL Schmitz gay commercial. Cause honestly, if Budweiser did a version of that,
they'll just slap their logo on that.
Just slap the logo. Done.
So I think, you know, but the truth is that representation does matter. So even if it's as simple as they do a fucking Instagram campaign where they just show different people in different relationships, or they fucking show pictures of people drinking at Pride when you know it's a queer community being represented. Something small like that is at least like, we're not just pandering to you, we also are including you.
So it doesn't have to be an overthought thing. It's just like, just be earnest about it.
No, exactly. Okay. I mean, and then there's...
have real representation.
Of course, there's bigger scale examples, right? Like, Patagonia gets a lot of shit because they put themselves out there as this like green, sustainable company. People are like, well, you create so much and you make billions of dollars, but they also legitimately upcycle like all of their shit.
Yvon Chouinard, his book about how he started Patagonia. Ever since I read that, I'm just like, I don't even buy a ton of their stuff, but I just like them as a company.
Right. Now. And
he was actually walking the walk. Like he was making mountain climbing mm-hmm. equipment and it put so many holes in the mountain that he stopped making the equipment and switched to clothes because he loved mountain climbing so much. I'm like, that's somebody who's like, oh no, like I don't care if I know I'm making gangbusters money wise. Like that's being about that life.
And like a good example too is, well, like I said, like benefits and things, right? It's like if your company's going to change their logo for the entire month to a rainbow, then their benefits should reflect that, right? That's a bigger scale example. But I remember Alexis Ohanian, the founder of Reddit, was talking about this. I went to a conference a couple of years ago and he was one of the speakers at it. And he was talking about like reassessing the benefits program that he offered to people at Reddit. And he, his wife, Serena Williams, was pregnant at the time where he was sort of reassessing all the benefits, and Serena Williams had a pretty horrific pregnancy.
She did.
And he ended up having to take a ton of time off of work. And that was when he had this like, oh God moment, oh shit moment, where he realized the only reason I was able to take all this time off of work is because I'm literally the CEO of Reddit and no one else at my company has these benefits. And I think, you know, he basically told this story and it was amazing because this was a marketing conference and he was supposed to be talking about like, how did you start Reddit? And he was like, fuck you, I'm going to talk about benefits for an hour. And he did.
How to treat your employees, right?
But he basically said like, you know, you have to put yourself in the shoes of everyone in your organization in order to be fair. And he's like, and I didn't realize until I was in the position of what the fuck would I do if I was any one of my other employees and my wife was in the hospital for 4 weeks and my daughter was in intensive, you know, care unit. And like, I had to take 2 months off of work. No one else would be able to do that. So I think when companies, you know, it's cliched, right? It's like, you don't think about it until it happens to you, but think about what if it happened to you? What if you had to adopt because your wife couldn't get pregnant? You would want to have that included. What if your son decided that they identified as a female and they wanted to transition? Like, you just have to think about the possibilities, even if it means coming from a selfish place of thinking about what if it was me? Mm-hmm. Sometimes that's what you have to do.
That's where it starts from.
You know,
personal is political, right?
Do you think a business can overcorrect? Like they're trying so hard to be like, look, like we are so accepting and sensitive that it actually like can maybe put a spotlight on that person where it's like, hey, I just want to like work here and do my thing.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of like using the token, whoever, right?
Token, whatever, you minority.
Know, whatever minority in whether your, it's sexual, in your brochures gender. Or whatever. But I haven't seen a lot of that personally. What I've seen is...
Glad you mentioned that, because that was actually going to be another question I had.
I've seen two sides of it. So I've seen the bad side, which is everyone goes along with it. And this, I had this experience actually because a friend of mine who was transitioning at the time asked everyone at the workplace to use she, her pronouns. And I was applying to do freelance at that company. And when I had asked my friend, you know, is everyone using your pronouns? She was like, yeah, it's actually been really great. Like everyone's been really respectful. Everyone's been, you know, really keeping on top of him. Like, that's awesome. Then I went in for this freelance interview and the person I interviewed with was like, yeah, so, you know, he told us that you were great. And, you know, really, we know him from a previous job. And so it sort of just like all fell out, right? It was like, oh, so they're using the right pronouns to her face, but when they were to each other when she's not in the room.
So again, like they talk about that life, but they're not about that life.
Correct. And then, gotcha. But then on the other hand, a really beautiful and wonderful example of acceptance that a lot more companies are doing is very simply just having people put pronouns in their bios. Like if you have a Slack name, put she, her next to your name.
And
if
you're seeing it now too.
It's like on LinkedIn and stuff.
It's happening so much because now everybody is on Zoom and WebEx and everyone is putting their pronouns next to their name on the Zoom calls, right. Which I'm seeing across.
And the reason that matters and the reason that's a really important thing for businesses to offer is because if everyone's doing it, then it's not, oh, I'm strange for having to say
she, normalize. She, her. That's the whole key. You normalize.
So that's it. Those are kind of two examples, right? On the one hand, you have people who, you know, the workplace is all kind of like, okay, yeah, great, we'll use the pronouns. But then in a conversation where that person isn't in the room, they're not. But then a really good example is like companies who, you know, open that option up to use your pronouns to put them in your, you know, profile or whatever. And then it just normalizes it and creates a more comfortable space.
Now, how could you apply that, or would the same mentality apply just maybe on a smaller scale for like a small business that wants to be like, hey, I have this small business that's, you know, next to either nightclubs or businesses that are very involved in the queer community, but I am not in that community, but I want to be supportive and I also want to sell products to them. So is it the same approach with small businesses or even just individual people and businesses and creators, or do they have to approach differently because they're not this, or do they have an advantage that they can approach it differently because they're not this big known entity?
So as someone who works extensively with words, words make a really big impact. Yeah, and, so language, what I do,
language.
Words, language, yes. So what I think small businesses, but businesses of any size can do, and this is something I push for constantly, is just think about the language you're using and how inclusive it really is. So, you know, if you're writing an advertisement or, you know, an ad campaign or commercial, it can be a partner. They can be a partner. It doesn't have to be wife or husband or girlfriend or boyfriend. It could just be partner, and partner mm-hmm. is very universal. You know, use they instead of he if you can. You know,
or just use the
noun. I worked on a product recently that was for kids and families, but it said, you know, it was a tent. It was a pop-up tent. And it said, you know, can fit two kids and one parent. You know, not every kid has a parent. Some kids have mm-hmm. guardians. So I changed it to two kids and one grown up. And it's just very like right. simple language like that. But it takes the extra effort to think through, you know, am I including everyone that I possibly can in this message? But ultimately, those are such small tweaks. And they really do make a difference from someone saying, is this for me or is this not for me? Hey, debunkers. Before we finish up this interview clip with Jason, we wanted to take a few minutes to explain some of the concept we've mentioned in the last 20 minutes because we haven't gotten to do our usual mid-episode education break.
Yeah. So first, let's talk a little bit more about sex and sexuality in the media and how that's associated with sexual attitudes, sexual social norms, and sexual behavior. As we've noted, there's a lot of sex in advertising and marketing, which may seem harmless. But studies show that it might not be as harmless as we thought. Yeah. So a recent meta-analysis, which is a study looking at all the other research out there, and this one looked at 59 other studies by Coyne and colleagues out of the University of Michigan in 2018, found that exposure to sex in the media is associated with several outcomes, especially for adolescents and young adults. These negative outcomes include perpetuation of sexual scripts and gender roles for women and men, and risky sexual behaviors as the norm.
So when So there are these studies we're looking at media in general or advertising and marketing specifically?
It's looking about all sex in the media. Mm-hmm. So it's across all the spectrums. And what they've basically found is that it perpetuates these scripts that men are supposed to act a certain way, women are supposed to act a certain way, and that
relationships are supposed to look a certain way.
And look a certain way. And mm-hmm. all of those perpetuation of norms results in an inability for some youth, and especially adolescents and emerging adults, to embrace sexual identity, embrace anything outside of the norm. So this mainstream, all this sex in marketing and advertising potentially has some negative and harmful effects that, you know, we should kind of be aware of in terms of sex education and how we talk to our kids and how we talk to young adults. That just because there's sex in media and marketing doesn't mean we're actually talking about some positive sexuality like we like to talk about on the podcast.
Right. And it can perpetuate these, you know, very specific stereotypes and standards. And when there aren't scripts in the media that challenge those very stereotypical ideas, then it just continues to make those
exactly
ideas,
the scripts. The scripts don't change. And part of what we talk about on our podcast is these scripts need to change. We need to be more positive about sexuality, not just have these same old norms from, you know, industrialized worlds stick in place forever and ever. Because, you know.
And when we talk about scripts, we are talking about those sexual scripts in the sociological sense, but also literally in media. The scripts.
Exactly.
Okay. And then second, what we wanted to talk about or just explain briefly is this idea of performative allyship that we just talked about with Jason. So performative allyship refers to the sort of tendency of leaders and organizations to rhetorically support diversity and inclusion. Particularly in the
you
area,
just talk the talk.
Exactly. Particularly in the area of race equality, but also for other marginalized groups. And this term performative allyship became particularly popular after the murder of George Floyd. Many businesses were appropriating the Black Lives Matter messaging and claiming to be allies, but it was much more for a social image agenda and not with any real backing for the experience of Black people and for police brutality, anti-police brutality.
So like in sexual minorities, it's like everybody slapping a rainbow flag.
Correct.
Is there another term for that performative allyship?
Yes, a great term, slacktivism.
Oh, God.
Or armchair activism, both of them basically being like, you're active, except like, you're not.
You're not.
You're sitting, you're slacking off. You're just saying, we care about X, Y, and Z, but not really showing up for us.
So yeah, so a rainbow in the front of your office does not count.
Does not count, no. And if you, you know, one of the things that happened on social media, especially in the aftermath of the George Floyd murder, was a lot of people were putting that black square on their mm-hmm. Instagram accounts or their social media accounts or whatever, but that was it.
That was it.
Just like, thank you for your black square on your Instagram. Now, what are you going to do about it? Mm-hmm. So that is what we mean when we're referring to performative allyship, is the presentation of being an ally, but no actual follow through.
But no there. No walking the walk, really. No, putting structures in place to actually improve the situation and change the social norms around racism and around sexism and sexual minority.
Correct. Which, again, is where that term armchair activism comes from, is you can't walk the walk if you're sitting in your armchair. Easy. All right. So then we're going to play you the rest of the interview. Sit tight. It's about six more minutes. But we'll talk a little bit about rebranding in the wellness industry and also the OnlyFans switch to not being a sex positive website somehow.
What?
All right.
All right. Let's do it.
Enjoy.
The reason why I asked that question is fairly recently, right? OnlyFans, the reason why I bring it up, because I think this is an interesting case study, and it happened with Tumblr as to a degree as well, where like Tumblr didn't set out to be a business that or a site or a platform that dealt in sex, but a lot of people were selling sex or posting sexual content on there. It's all right, there's sexual content on tons of websites, but then Tumblr's like, we're going to just axe this. It got to like, because like Tumblr was getting big, and then all of a sudden Tumblr's user base went down,
plummeted.
And then OnlyFans, you know, was not,
like,
not a
like, we made that would be you. Like Haagen-Dazs being like, we don't sell ice cream.
Yeah. So, so what that was interesting is OnlyFans.
Sex made you.
OnlyFans was like, hey, we're going to pivot away from this. Even though like that, like to a more, you know, more so than Tumblr, because Tumblr wasn't like, hey, this is what makes us.
But
OnlyFans was, and then tried to pivot away from it. Didn't work out too well, and they quickly pivoted back. But what I found interesting was that I think it was the reasoning behind it that at least what OnlyFans was saying. OnlyFans, right. The company was, because we have investors now and money and dot, dot, dot. That's what they said. Who knows? Well, the reason why I bring that up is that, do you think that, or have you seen businesses that deal with, that deal in sex or sex-related products or erotica? Do they get to a certain growth point where it's like, oh, we got to, like, we were doing this. Like, hey, we were Kinks R Us, but now we got to change the name because, like, we're doing X amount in sales and now we got to be, like, it's inclusive, but going away from the thing that brought you to the dance money-wise. So, right. It's a weird thing.
A pivot that I see in what I'm reading in the sexuality world is sex toys and erotica has turned into a wellness industry. That's how they've rebranded sex.
Thank you for saying rebranding. That's why I wanted to say, like, do people in that space, like, have to rebrand, or is it more like they get to a certain level and they feel like to rebrand, or is it just it's in the pursuit of profit?
Who knows? I don't know. I just know that it's happening. Okay.
But I will say, like, you know, all of the stores that we, you know, promoted on our social, like, those are small companies that really are standing behind authentically what they're selling.
Yeah, real niche.
And I think that is a way that I can't speak for the straight communities, but I can speak for the LGBT communities, that a lot of folks try to buy small business. And because they're like, this is a trans-owned business, or this is a queer-owned business, you know, this is a sustainable business. I think buying small is always good, but I think actually, weirdly, in the adult retail space, it's even better to buy small. You've got better quality control, and you've got better, you know, to what we were talking about before, there is obviously less performative allyship. It really is, you know, you're buying from people who saw a niche for wellness and sexuality.
Well, and the other piece of that is you're also seeing much more sex toys being developed by women-owned companies.
And it's very sex positive. There was definitely a time where it was, you know, amazing.net, and it was just like, you know,
the amazing super
crazy.
Store.
yeah, like crazy kink, whatever. But if you look at these sites now, it's all about being sex positive. It's all, you deserve to feel good. You and your partners deserve to feel good. It's all about feeling good.
So that's actually an interesting point, because you're saying buy small, shop small, right? Mm-hmm. Do you think that there's an advantage? Because, like, we were talking about, like, you know, the risks and possible disadvantages of, you know, dealing or selling something that's taboo or very niche or maybe not considered the accepted norm. Do you think that, like, from a business standpoint, do you think there's an advantage in you're dealing in an area that's taboo and that's something that's not the norm? Even with your own podcast, like, is there an advantage that you're willing to talk about a subject that's not talked about? And then later on, when it, like, if and when it does become more accepted and more shows come out, like, you're like the OG show that's been talking about it. So I wonder if, like, is there an advantage from a business standpoint when you're willing to take that risk and willing to go into a taboo area?
Yeah, I mean, sex sells, but sex ed also sells.
Well, we hope that sexuality
starts
selling.
That needs to be a sticker or like a t-shirt or something. Yeah, sex sells, but also sort of sex ed.
I mean, I hope so. I hope sexuality starts selling as a positive way of increasing your well-being and increasing your life satisfaction and pleasure in life. All of those things should be selling, not just sexy lingerie and showing lots of skin. You know, the sexualness, the erotic energy is a big factor that hopefully will become more of something that we can, you know, market, merchandise, all of those good things.
But to your point earlier, when we were talking about, you know, what did you do to get this started? One of the things we did do was look at competitors in the space. And so, yeah, there wasn't a ton of competition in this space. And, you know, there are really popular podcasts that talk about sex, but it's like, Guys We Fucked, that's one of the podcasts. And then, right, like, there's another one, like,
Sex with My Mom.
Yeah, that one is a bad example, because that's literally a guy talking to his mom about sex, which is this. But talking about, you know, looking at other competitors, there wasn't as much researched, like, sex talk. And so that was where we really saw the opportunity. But
a lot of it's niche. It's queer. It's,
but that is what you have to do.
Stuff like that.
If you're gonna, you know, follow a passion project, you do have to be really thoughtful about where your space is in the space. There's spaces within the space, and you have to find yours.
I think that brings up an interesting point and a question I have of, So you're like, hey, there's an advantage of you're willing to take that risk. We want to talk about the taboo thing, but you had both also said before that, hey, we're putting it out there that we are not the end all be all experts. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, people, you know, one of the reasons why you wanted to do this thing is that people doing their own research, quote unquote, when the space is not filled with a lot of people, and with the combination of that on the one hand, and on the other hand, you know, anybody can put content out. Is there a concern, you know, because you're addressing it in your own show by saying we're not the experts, but like, is there a credibility concern? Hey, it's not a space that everybody's in, so cool, I can sprout some misinformation, some bullshit, and it's going to be a while before somebody checks me on it.
Well, I think.
Have either one of you ever seen that and be like, oh no, like this is BS? Well,
I would say most of the stuff I've seen out there that takes the same approach that we do academically is pretty well researched. And people bring in the experts when they don't know what to talk about. And that's something we're trying to do a lot more about
too. Yeah,
we'll
be doing much more.
But, you know, it's not anything to sneeze at that you're getting your PhD in this at UConn. And that's part of what sold it in too. You know, it wasn't just, hey, we're going to talk about sex because we want to. It was, hey, I have a background in women's and gender studies and master's in communications, and you're getting your PhD in psychology.
And I can literally get the research articles like when they're online, when they're not available to the public.
I think also the thing about what we're talking about in the field of sex and sexuality is that especially sexuality research is a pretty young field. And so when we say we're not the experts, it's because there's also evolving research coming out all the time. Constant. So we can't be the experts because no one is yet.
Well, and what's happened in the sexuality field is there's been a shift, and it's a slow shift from talking about dysfunction to talking about well-being and pleasure. And that's where we want to be part of that shift.
I do love a rebrand. Thanks so much to Jason Sylvia and the Creative Capital Show for hosting us and having these conversations about corporate allyship, performative allyship, and the wellness industry. We had a great time on the show. We recorded it from my kitchen. My cat joined in. It was great. Skipper, yeah, the boy just really wants to be the mascot for Sex Ed Debunked. And who can blame him, really?
We'll have to get some photos up on the Instagram of Skipper.
Yeah, we'll throw Skipper out there. But yeah, we're glad that you tuned in.
Well, definitely. And today's myth was that sex and sexuality sell. Because the truth is, our culture is still very uncomfortable with these topics in many ways. And we still have a long way to go to move from tolerance to acceptance and eventually, hopefully, to normalization and inclusivity in sexuality and other things as well.
Yes. So we hope you enjoyed. Until next time, sex and sexuality, they might sell, but it's a cheap sell.
Oh, good one.
So that's another myth.
Put to bed. Have a good one, folks.
Thanks for tuning in for this week's episode of Sex Ed Debunked. During the course of our podcast, we have limited time together, which means that unfortunately, many identities, groups, and movements may not be represented each week. The field of sexuality and gender orientations, identities, and behaviors are changing and growing rapidly, and we remain committed to being as inclusive as possible.
Please remember that all of us, including us, are learning in this area and may occasionally slip up. We ask that we all continue to be kind to one another so that we can create a truly inclusive and accepting environment. As always, if you have any questions or comments, please feel free to reach out to us at SexEdDebunked on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.
There you have it, folks, an episode with Christine and Shannon Curley, along with their guest, Jason Sylvia from the Creative Capital Show, who has not called Elise nor I yet, which is a little fishy, but, you know, Jason, we're here. We're hoping that you just give us a little ring or an email or whatever the kids do these days. But if everybody else that's listening to this would like to check out Christine and Shannon's podcast, Sex Ed Debunked, you can check them out at Sex Ed Debunked on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And if you'd like to check us out on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, we are at Anchored the Show. But most importantly, stay salty.
Anchored is produced by Trailblaze Media, along with myself, Elise Swearingen, and Shay Weintraub. From Trailblaze Media, Ezra Winters is our executive producer.